Tim, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, that was unanimous. And we can move back into open. Okay, so the consent agenda. Were there any comments to the minutes?
No.
Check register?
No.
No.
Okay, I think I've got to sign that.
Okay.
Looks like we have a PO here maybe tonight?
We do not.
No POs?
Oh.
Okay, any other items on the consent agenda? Okay, item five. We have the updates in our board packets. Were there any questions or some discussion on any of that?
I had a question in the
minutes.
Can you just explain what the KPCW thing was? apparently there were some statements that might have been made on the radio and you didn't agree with them and wanted to set the record straight?
Park City Water Department was on the radio talking about their city council approving to provide and sell surplus water to Summit Water. And through that discussion, it was news to Leslie Thatcher that she said, essentially, what's happened? Why is Summit Water all of a sudden running out of water, if you will? And there was no mention that Mountain Regional's been providing surplus water since, what, 20? We're going into our fifth year now, since 2015. And I felt like I wanted to get on and control that message a little bit and let the community know that the master agreement is a good thing for the community. It allows for the shared water resources that we have and that we've been participating in that for a number of years. So that was
good.
That was the purpose.
She had Summit Water on. I didn't catch the Park City one, but I caught the Summit Water one. She was definitely asking very pointed questions that he was answering.
Yeah.
It led to some good
very
discussion.
Very carefully. Yeah.
It kind of forced Andy's hand.
Well, weren't there a lot of things about the lawsuit and stuff, too? And they've been going after.
Yes.
He wouldn't
yes.
speak to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Is there anything else there on the updates?
I've got a couple questions.
Mike, I just had a question. I guess it's in Marty's report on the leaks. The information that's in there, that's our real data, correct, Marty?
Yes, that's from the new Badger meters, Bob. So it's all the so that is actual data off of those meters.
So a critical leak is considered to be 60 or more gallons per hour, is that correct?
Yes.
And it looked like there are some out there that have been running kind of long.
I know.
Am I reading that correctly?
You are. And what's interesting is Anna has contacted all of those people by phone or email several times since these were first, detected. And it's just the lack of them caring or doing anything about it.
Okay, so it's not systemic leaking, it's customer premise leaking in effect?
Yeah, it's leaking on the customer side. It could be toilets, water softeners, different things going on inside their, boiler systems. Most of these are big houses. They're not small facilities, with the exception of Home Depot. They have a hose or something on somewhere they can't find. They've had that on for years, and we've done everything to try to help them. But they're getting an email every day. These people are getting emails saying you have a leak, and they're just not addressing it.
Oh, okay. And we don't have any remedy. I mean, like, we can't shut their water off just because it's leaking, right?
We could if it's if it deemed to be an issue or caused the district harm or health or safety issues or causing damage. But most of these, even though they're 60 gallons per hour, that's a relatively small leak, and it's probably more likely a toilet running that they can't hear, but it's running. 95% of the time, it's a toilet.
Really?
Yeah. And they can hear them. The only way they can see is if they put food coloring in their toilet tank and then it leaks into the bowl. And it's happened to me, so I know it's true. So it's just weird, but that can happen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Scott, on the general manager report, I'll probably keep asking this question because I'll forget until we take over Community Water, but who is funding the work that's going on right now?
That's one of my questions.
Who is funding the work that's going on?
Who is funding the ongoing work for Community Water?
The internal man hours or?
The operation of their system.
No, we're making capital improvements right now, right? I just wonder who's funding that work.
TCFC.
Yeah, TCFC is funding all improvements. The only improvement that Mountain Regional elected to fund last construction season was the installation of a couple water main stubs to feed into the Hidden Creek property because they were getting ready to repave the road. And we felt we'd rather get in, get those stubs in, get it out of the road so that we could connect to it, as opposed to tearing the road back up.
So how much are we into this so far? I just wanted to know as this is dragging on and stuff that are we pulling money out of our pocket to keep this going?
In my financial report in the capital budget, close to the end, it has a line item for community water, and expended to date on Mountain Regional's behalf is $34,000, primarily made up of $27,000, which was the line work, the stubs, talks.
Okay.
The other are some small legal fees for some water right work that we did, and that's really about it. Other than us entering into this agreement with Lang for the well, which I'm showing is now, that we've been encumbered.
And how are we showing that? Is this essentially, I'm not a financial person, are we loaning that money to somebody and are you going to get paid back for it?
We'll be reimbursed for it when the loan closes.
Okay.
And Drinking Water has approved what TCFC is currently spending to be reimbursed, and then also the well. They've already said if we go ahead and need to start that before the annexation closes or the loan closes, that is reimbursable.
Okay, so we're keeping the books on this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But I thought we talked about last time that if Vail continues to drag their feet, there are going to be costs that are going to impact Mountain Regional coming up soon. I thought we kind of discussed that maybe at some point we need to...
I thought there were revenues.
Yeah,
that
revenue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And right now, I mean, the update on Community Water is there's the Hidden Creek easement, and we've been going back and forth between the attorneys getting that agreement into a signable form. Vail continues to be an issue, and I continue to ask. We're going to have, I don't know if you're going to, are we going to have a telephone call tomorrow?
Nobody's responded to that.
There are,
and that's TCFC's driving that telecom. I don't know why we even need to have one.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, outside of the Vail easements, because it looks like the Hidden Creek easement is going to wrap up in the next week or so. The Vail easements are already done. They just need to be signed or co-signed by Vail. And then the interconnect, it's the Grand Summit interconnect, is to replace a line in an interconnection that's already in place that TCFC wants to replace. And I mean, technically we don't need that to close because we would just not abandon the existing line. But TCFC wants that moved, and I thought we had resolved all the issues until Summit Water's attorney got involved and decided that he didn't understand the deal.
Well, and another thing that happened last week is Spencer White representing TCFC, I guess he's not actually employed by them. He called and said that location's not going to work. So I met with TCFC, Brian and I met with TCFC and Summit Water last week to sort that out. So
The reason for my question was just that I know that this is going to be very difficult to try to close it because there's a lot of players, and yet we're still moving forward. And I was just wondering who is funding the capital project and if it was being considered to be a loan that was going to get repaid in the books. It's just moving money from right pocket to left pocket, but it's keeping
right,
the...
Mostly the ones that are paying for all the big capital improvements outside of the $27,000 one is TCFC, and they're basically loaning Community Water the money to do that, mm-hmm. with the understanding that when this closes, they'll be reimbursed through the loan. So they are, you know, fronting all of those costs.
So does it hurt us if this drags out?
Because it's our employees' time, right? I mean, Scott and others are continuing to have to invest hours into this that they could be investing on other efforts.
Yeah, and I think the other is the fact that you're not getting the anticipated revenue since you haven't closed the deal.
Because it seems like it could just go on and on forever.
Yes.
And without a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe that's what we need to.
They intend to be patient.
They are. I think there is one other. There is a point that will put a lot more pressure on TCFC and on Community Water. That may not make any difference if Vail doesn't budge, but it's going to get warm out and people are going to want to start watering their lawns. And Community Water's water treatment plant failed last summer. So the only way for them to water their lawns is if they take water through our interconnect, which the current interconnect agreement does not speak to that, or come up with some kind of arrangement with Summit Water. Now, as Dave just said, this Summit Water interconnect and this pipeline, TCFC is ready to dig that up and abandon it. So that leaves us. They would have to come to Mountain Regional.
Why would they dig it up? Why would they...
It goes, apparently goes through part of the parking lot that they're using that wrapped up in their Vail deal.
So they would, if these customers want to have irrigation water, based on what I heard this week, the only entity that can supply it is us.
Leaves us in a tough spot.
It leaves us in a position where they would, you know, the interconnect agreement would have to be revised. There would have to be a price for that water. There would have to be, you know, some rules in place for them to utilize that water. And we would dictate what those rules and pricing are.
Who'd the agreement be with?
TCFC.
With TCFC. I mean, the one who's in the tough position is TCFC.
Maybe we'll be talking to KPCW every week.
Yeah.
So does it feel like a deadline really wouldn't do any good?
Time, I mean, how well,
what do you think?
Is the county council on all these delays? And at what point in time do we, you know, sort of appeal to them, assuming that they have any leverage to bring to bear on any of the parties?
I have discussed the issue with the council. Obviously, their concern is they would like the annexation go through because they have a lot of residents who, in Community Water, you know, they need this annexation to happen.
Right.
At the same time, the county is having problems with Vail as well on other issues. So the council is well aware that Vail is being problematic, and that's kind of been the way things have been with Vail. I don't know how much pressure they can put on Vail. The biggest pressure is when we talk to TCFC and say, hey, you know, the board's going to pull out of this unless we close. Then they try to put more pressure on Vail. But it's a weird relationship.
Especially with the county field, Dave, if we did in fact balk on the transaction.
I think that the council would prefer that Mountain Regional didn't walk.
Is there a tipping point here that we can identify?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I feel like part of it's our mission to be the provider of last resort.
And, I mean, I will continue to push from my end, and with your permission, saying, you know, the board talked about it, and they, you know, Bob and Tim, man, they want to pull out of this deal.
You could put Ian in there, too.
Yeah,
that's fine, as long as they remember who we are.
You know what? Well, we feel like it needs to move forward. We don't want to be in June and have to have a new agreement at the last minute and not have time to do it correctly.
Well,
I mean, I guess with Vail, are there specific things they object to that are the reasons that they're not signing, or?
The thing they object to is they want this clause in the agreements, even agreements that they're not parties to, that basically says, we promise that none of the water infrastructure will ever interfere, ever, with any of Vail's operations. And it's just kind of like, who can sign a clause like that?
Yeah.
Apparently, in Colorado, Vail gets lots of people to sign those. But we've said, no, that's not going to happen. You've got, you know, the easements that we're talking about are gaps. I mean, the easement, and we have like a broad easement over one area, and there's like a 100-foot gap. And the easements the four easements we're talking about are just gap easements. It's just kind of like
cleanups.
Does it just simply say that we can't interfere, or does it say if we do, we have to do something?
It says we can't interfere, but also says if we do interfere, that we have liability for whatever their damages are. And so we've taken that out. We've explained to their New York City attorneys why that doesn't work. And we've explained to them that these are gap easements that are, you know, 20 feet here, 100 feet there. There are only four of them. Their attorneys have explained to us that they understand that, and they actually agree with our logic. And they go back to their client, Bloomfield, and nothing gets done. So I will continue to put some more pressure on Larry. If we have a meeting tomorrow, I'll ask him about that too.
From an internal perspective.
Is there some way that we can not kill the deal, but actively withdraw from any further consultations, discussions, you know, in effect, let our people go back to doing other Mountain Regional work?
Which is what we have been effectively trying to do. You know, what I was kind of started into, from an internal perspective, we have gone to a bare minimum level of effort to support this process.
I'm not really doing anything. I mean, maybe it's an email with Stacy once a week. That's it. And I think Marty and Brian, we're all just on hold. We're not putting forth any effort at all.
I think I'm the only one that's expending any serious time on that.
Go, Dave!
And brain damage.
But there's got to be some, like I said, a tipping point on here. There's got to be some point out there.
Dollar amount.
If we go this far, community water is going to disappear and nobody's going to be serving them, and we got to have something done by that point in time,
or
there's a whole bunch of customers. I mean, do we have any idea what those circumstances would be where we're kind of stuck on dumb?
That we're, say that again, we're stuck on?
It's an old contractor's term, stuck on dumb.
Oh, good solution.
There's got to be something where they say that the season opens up and they can't operate, or the some developer is going to sue somebody or whatever. Otherwise, we're just going to be in idle here forever.
Yeah.
And well, I just want to make sure that at some point, when somebody's not getting their water, they don't come to Mountain Regional and say, we're the cause of it.
Yeah.
And if it isn't possible, then I'm not worried about it. But if it is possible, because we got our mitts in it now, have we somehow got ushered ourselves into being mentioned on a complaint somehow, where all we were doing is trying to take the water service over?
I think, I guess my two cents are, I just get the impression that Vail, it's, in some ways, it's for the deal to be completed, it's up to them to agree to the terms. Correct, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's their fault, but if it doesn't go through, the finger gets pointed at Vail. Will people point the finger at us? Of course they will. Because our name's been talked about as part of this transaction, and that's just the name of the game.
How many more fingers can be pointed at them for stuff, right?
Yeah.
I don't have a solution. I just want to know if there's some point in time where we actually have to do something other than just keep cooperating and see if something happens. Because I think if we were a ski resort being acquired by them, mm-hmm. we'd have a lot more attention by them. But I think that because we're a ski resort that's been acquired by them, it's just kind of...
Yeah.
Dave, you must be having just a never-ending cycle of new people coming in that...
We do. I mean, they've gone through a whole slew.
And you're having to explain to them every time what's going on, right?
And I think, I mean, the ultimate would be is if the division said, we're only going to keep the loan open till X, and you have to close by X.
Can you get them to do that?
Well, then it'd be like the well drilling contract with Wang. You know, mm-hmm. it's good for 45 days.
If the state would put a deadline on
some
that,
sunset on the whole thing,
right? They got to manage their cash flow. They got to manage these accounts.
Yeah. I mean that would be something that would be a drop dead date that we could say, hey, you know, the deal just can't go.
Or let's say we drill the well with Lang, and we pay for it out of our own pockets. Is there a period where we can't get reimbursed any longer for that?
No, not as long as, not as long as the deal goes through.
Okay.
At some point.
I think we're part of the reason we're in this spot where there isn't necessarily a tipping point to find goes back to what Karen said before, because of who we are. You know, our charter to be the provider of last resort. We're a special service district to Summit County. The Summit County Council wants to see these folks taken care
That's
of.
That's okay, but it doesn't define being a chump, too, right?
Well, you're right.
So,
or representing the ratepayers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get them to manufacture a sunset on this somehow. See if that works. What's the downside?
Or even
I can look into it.
Their deficiencies on storage, you know. I know they did fire storage through our interconnect, but they're still deficient on storage just for the existing well infrastructure or the customers that they have because they lost their tank.
Well, no, as long as we provide the fire storage,
right,
they're
which
fine.
Is what the agreement is. But it's only for fire storage.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for domestic,
I mean, we're
domestic
not,
use.
It, yeah. Just so you know, that we're not the only ones that are frustrated outside of TCFC. Because in order for TCFC to provide fire flow for all the new developments that are now in the process of being built, they need a new site for a tank, and Vail will not give Summit Water permission to put the tank there.
So can they get framing permits? Can they start the stick framing in the wood?
They don't have a water concurrency letter. The Summit Water won't give it to them because they don't have water storage.
So and the fire department won't let them start stick framing.
And so they can do foundation or something. Yeah. Okay, should we? You guys getting hungry? Should we have dinner? Getting hungry. Okay.
Sure. Before we get into the financial report.
Well, we're...
Ian, did you have any other questions?
No, we're hard to cook tonight.
I had another weird question.
Okay.
Why did you guys have to read a book called That's What She Said?
I'm glad you asked that because I was thinking the same thing.
It was a recommendation from Tom Fisher, just talking about men and women working together and implicit bias. Dave had to read it too.
Yeah. So all the managers in the county had to read it.
So I had one.
Did you have to take a test on it?
No.
No, we had to talk about it.
No.
On a similar kind of level, Marty, are we all getting ID badges?
We are. We are.
Even the board?
Oh, I don't know about the board. We could do that for the board. If you'd like it, that'd be great. We'll get it arranged maybe next board meeting in May if you'd like.
If we need them, I'm not asking for them.
I know we are going through that protocol for our temporary employees, you know, or the seasonal ones that will come on board this summer and kind of going through.
But all employees have badges already, or this is new across the board?
All of our employees do.
Yeah. So they're not RFID entry badges, they're just identification badges. Yeah. If our guys are out working, you know, in the public, they know that they're not impersonating somebody else.
And that is new, we haven't had that before.
We've had these badges for quite some time, we just haven't utilized them necessarily. Okay. But we will.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Way cool. You're totally official. I trust you with anything.
Okay, does that take us through the questions on the department updates?
I was just going to ask Brian about the seasonal hires. Do we go to a specific entity to find people for that, or how do you, where do you find people for a seasonal short-term job under, what was it, 780 hours or whatever?
We advertise in the park record.
Okay.
Indeed. Word of mouth. That seems to be the biggest success.
I guess that's where I was going. Is like, do you struggle finding people, or is it really quick? Oh, you do.
Well, but I would say you.
This year's actually been kind of weird. We've actually got quite a few applicants. So.
I think we usually do an okay job.
Okay.
For whatever reason, I think of a lot of it's word of mouth. But we did put post flyers in the high school in
cool.
North.
Oh, so it's not just people over 18.
16 and up. We opened it up a little bit to try to get some.
Just a valid driver's license is all we need.
That would be an awesome opportunity for a young person.
Yes.
I think we had
to get the word out.
I'll put the word out.
We actually hired one guy, I think, that went through the school process. So.
Awesome.
We interviewed one this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Did it go okay?
With respect to hiring full-time employees, you know, it's...
So we
get far fewer applicants than folks in the front.
Yeah, I can see that.
Just due to cost of living.
Cool. Okay. Thanks for the insight on that.
So I think that's good. Takes us through the questions on the department updates, and we can go to. Do you mind doing the?
No, I can go to financial. Yeah. We're still looking pretty good, kind of on track from what we saw last month. We're at $400,000 positive variance on the budget. Kind of split 50-50, that variance about $192,000 is coming from $100,000 in retail water sales. The other $56,000 is primarily related to interest income, just on higher cash balances and higher interest and interest earnings rate than we anticipated. And our impact fees are up slightly to $36,000 over what we budgeted. As compared to last year, though, they are down quite significantly, $336,000, and that's primarily just due to a large condo complex, LV, which one, LV 6 or 4, that came on last year, and it was like $250,000 LV 4 impact fee. So. But we have some things in the works that I think are good. We have discoveries coming on, so we'll have some impact fees there.
It's by the Wildwood School.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by Park.
And so where are most of the new impact fees this year coming from? Just from the Silver Creek Village? Or?
Well, Silver Creek Village, it's interesting, and we'll talk through that. They have prepaids. Mm-hmm. So it's good that we're using up those prepays that they have. So we've had, we have 29 units so far through March, and I just
13 of them are.
13 of them are prepaids, but I just signed some more that are using prepaids. They haven't come in paid the rest of the fees yet, but those will be coming. Promontories had a couple. Those aren't obviously as big. I just had a Colony and a Glen Wild. It's kind of a little bit all over.
Yeah. There's a large two 32-unit buildings that are originally were going to be apartments that are now coming in as condos. And yeah. Their impact, you went
Accent
up like
$100,000
more than what was.
Are those the affordable housing?
Yeah.
Is that Silver Creek?
Silver Creek.
Yeah, so those are no impact fees. Yeah. But they're using up the prepaids, which is good. But the hotel, though.
The hotel, though, too, is coming in as a condo. Remember when we annexed hotel, the Accent Hotel across from the Four Seasons? Or
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
At one of the other meetings, somebody say that these prepaid water rights are for sale out on the open market?
That's correct.
Yes.
And are they selling at less than what we would be charging?
I don't know if we know that.
We don't know.
Probably.
I would assume
imagine
so.
They're getting a little bit of a haircut. How much?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Otherwise, why would you buy them?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if it would be a reasonable financial transaction for us to go ahead and buy them up.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this over the years, and the answer has typically been no.
Yeah. I think
is that because we don't expect them to be used, or the margin on it, Scott, we don't expect to be good.
I think what they were asking.
By buying up our cash.
I feel like we don't have that many left, other than what's over here.
And actually be used. Over here.
Yeah, we have really the majority is left in the Silver Creek area, and Matt Lowe is using those up. There are about I think it's about 18 prepaids that are left from New Park. That
right,
New Park
right.
ownership. And I think those were the ones that were trying to be marketed a few years ago. I think what they were asking wasn't something we were interested in doing. And I think this Lincoln Station
is
that the
purchase.
One is talking about yeah. that's going to be using them. And then
I think the theory that Bob's using here doesn't really, it's not a matter of how many are out there. Whether it's 3 or 10 or 15, I think what you're saying, Bob, is that if you got them all off the streets, they would immediately become worth more.
Yeah. And my response to that is there's no guarantee that impact fees won't go down. And I think that was part of the decision
okay.
that we don't know what impact fees are going to look like. And if they do go down, maybe you pay too much for them.
Right. Do you think there's really a likelihood that the impact fees will go down?
Yes.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Okay.
Did last time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe not this go around, but if you look towards the, you know, the more built out stages for Mountain Regional, there's going to be, we won't need as many capital projects to support additional growth, and thus. You know,
well, it's going to be an interesting day, Scott, when you lower impact fees and you got all these people who paid big ones, and I realize that the impact fees sort of fall out of, you know, the process, right?
Yep.
But I have a sneaking suspicion there are going to be some unhappy campers
yep.
who say, well, we paid for the build out of the system, and now these guys are just paying the marginal cost.
Yeah. The other consideration of impact fees is how much water each unit uses, and as you know, we expect the amount of water per unit to continue to go down, which is another element to that.
Okay, yeah. So
anyway,
we keep moving here.
Yeah.
With
okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, back to you, Lisa.
Okay. That was revenue. On the expense side, we're running really close to 2018. We're just slightly higher, and compared to budget, our variance is primarily in the operations, maintenance, and repairs, and that's largely due to repairs and maintenance. We don't do a lot of that in the winter. That, I think, will start to catch up as we hit the summer season. So I expect that will be used up. Cash, we're still in a good cash position. Compared to last year, we're about $2.6 million higher. That's primarily related to our higher retail sales last year and strong building economy and connection fees we had. We had a slight change from the prior month of $357,000. This is really kind of the year when we start using a little bit, or the time of the year we start using a little bit more cash as we wait for the water sales to start in the summer. Customer growth. We mentioned we have 29 connections to date. 13 of those are DigUse prepaid, so you'll notice our average per connection is down close to about $5,000. We talked kind of a little bit about what's coming on. I think that number will bump up as we see some of these other developments come on. Promontory has had 5 assessments. 6 is the average, so we're on track there. Water consumption for March was down pretty much right on target with our 4-year average. A little bit different than what we'd seen through February, which had been kind of significant increase in usage. Year to date, we're at about 5% above our 4-year average, 229 acre feet for Mountain Regional Water customers. Park City is right at where they were last year, a little bit higher than average, only because their treatment plant was down for those middle years. And Summit Water is right on where they were. Capital budget, we talked about the well. That's now on the capital budget as being encumbered. We have spent about $34,000 there. Our Summit Park project, we had an initial estimate of about $275,000. We had originally budgeted $200,000, so we had a little bit of an unallocated amount that we leave in there, just kind of a contingency, so we moved that up to that line item. And I think the other capital projects are kind of in the works. We did get the go-ahead for the EPA line, so work will begin on that soon. I don't know. This summer, Scott? I mean, how soon?
Yeah, so what we're waiting for is the things to dry out a bit out there so we can take some soil samples and get it tested. You know what we're dealing with, revise our soil mitigation plan, and we've already met with the contractor. Julie Cobley has already been to Summit County to talk to them about the permit process, so it should track pretty quick.
And I think next month we'll probably have a PO for meters as we continue to finish our meter changeouts for the summer.
What's the dollar value of the EPA line?
Without any soil handling considerations, it was $158,000, if I remember correctly, for 2,500 feet of 12-inch.
Who was the contractor?
Gerber. There's a change order to the tank and pump station project because they're directly related to tie that project into our system.
What do you think the soil handling cost could be?
I don't know. What we're going to do is we are hopeful that we have very little soil handling to do. That's the point of doing these tests at the front end. And then we're going to revise our soil handling plan, and we're going to sit down with Gerber and ask them if there's any change in price so that we understand what that is before we start.
Try to just put it all back in the trench.
Basically, they say the contamination is in the native floodplain. We're putting a water line through a road platform that's above the floodplain. So we're hopeful that we can stay out of the native soil.
We're in the imported clean stuff.
Correct.
Yeah, because you don't want to put hot soil on your pipe, right?
And there's specific rules about what you can and can't do.
How long is the soil handling plan?
It's a handful of pages.
I wouldn't mind reading it.
Okay.
Okay, that's a
Yep, that's it.
That's a good update. Sounds like everything's just cruising along nicely.
Okay. Oh, I guess just other and financial, the audit is done. The concurring partner, it's under his review right now. As soon as I get his comments back, I'll forward it to you, Karen, for your review.
Perfect.
And then we'll have it to present, the audit partner will be here to present Dana on
May 8th, right?
May 9th.
May 9th, yeah, yeah. Right.
Thank you, Lisa. Item A, we have a work session on the updates.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I can lead that discussion. Lisa and I, over the past couple of months, have worked through all the administrative policies, the bylaws, and the I might have some more. I'll just hang it up. And the personnel policies. We redlined those. Majority of the red lines were either minor corrections or mistakes from the last run, or some additional programs that Summit County has started incorporating those. And then some other kind of district-specific things that we'll talk about. We sent all that stuff to, all those red lines to Brian Bellamy and Jamie Bracken at Summit County for their approval and review. And that's where we're at. We're ready to walk through it with you and get your recommendation to approve them or redline as per your request.
Did I read that right? So the county has a paternity leave, 4 weeks paid.
Mm-hmm.
When did that start?
Last year.
Okay. I hadn't heard of that prior.
Okay. So what I'd like to do, Lisa, put together an outline here that kind of, it just focuses on the more substantial changes that we made. So I'll just step through that.
Yeah, I forgot to give Chris the PDF pages.
That's all right.
So in the bylaws, just a couple of minor changes. Section 2.5 is just clarifying the approval and recommendation functions of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to read these clauses, or have you all looked at them, or do you have them in front of you?
I like the outline idea of just kind of
just stepping through the outline.
I read through them already, so.
Yeah, 168 pages.
Yeah.
All right, section 3.7 is just updating the list of the board positions. Minor.
It's a little awkward where it says the board shall elect members as chair if you strike what's there in red. On 3.7.
I thought it was okay.
Board
shall elect members as chair of the board, vice chair of the board.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You gotta keep reading. Okay.
Those were the two just kind of cleanup changes in the bylaws.
You can say elect members.
Moving into the administrative policies, section 2.4C. All we did is adjust, based on our current practice, the service life of the membranes and the carbon.
Why did you take out the director of water quality in 1.6?
Because that was me. That was my position prior to moving into the general manager spot.
I thought that was Julie's.
Julie was hired as a staff engineer.
Okay. Okay, and then the carbon?
Yep, so the 2.4C is just updating the service life of the membranes and carbon as it relates to the rate stabilization fund.
So instead of 10 years, we're going every 7. So we're putting aside a little more money.
Yeah.
They're not lasting quite as long, it's a little more carbon. We're just using more
exactly.
Water, running more water through it.
Yeah, and we changed that because we just replaced half of our microfiltration membranes just last month.
And it was, they were in service for 7 years. Section 4, cash receipts and accounts payable, or accounts receivable, excuse me. Those updates were just to reflect our current practice, and basically some of those were some controls recommendations, I think, from the last audit that led to some of those changes.
Why are you getting specific in naming Wells Fargo unless Wells Fargo is...
I wondered that too.
That has a definition of some...
Like there's a Wells Fargo account that one of you does, and then everything else...
Yeah, there's a well. It's kind of the operating account. All bank accounts aren't done by. We moved some of the cash handling that was previously done downstairs at customer service now upstairs. Mm-hmm. Oh. So in order to have some separation of controls, Steve is handling the cash, and then I'm reviewing that bank reconciliation for the operating and checking and payroll.
My point is if you replace Wells Fargo tomorrow with somebody else, you'd have to amend this document.
Mm-hmm. We can say operating account.
Is there some other way that Wells Fargo will enter into agreement to be the account holder or something? On another document, you just say whoever the account holder is here.
I think we just change it. I'll say the operating account.
Yeah, I think that
okay.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Section 7.8, vehicle maintenance. I used to basically say that we'll fix a sticker to the windshield that states when maintenance is required. What I'd like to do is have our fleet manager track the milestone maintenance requirements for each vehicle and let the employees know when those requirements are coming up. Section.
Is there a necessity for saying per manufacturer's recommendation? Is there a chance that the general manager will require something different? Or, I mean,
no, originally it didn't have manufacturer recommendations in there at all.
Right.
And my feeling was, I don't know what service is needed for the vehicle.
You just declare the manufacturer's recommendations. Okay, never mind.
Well, and I think sometimes you need to have oil changes maybe more often or less often. Or
need something to go by, and you didn't want to set that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Tim's point, but that
maybe you could just say per their recommended guidelines for the manufacturers.
I actually like manufacturer specifications. I use it a lot with Rio on a bunch of our projects, and it just simplifies things. It's a basis for, you know, you don't have to make any decisions or interpretation. It's just follow manufacturer guidelines.
Okay. Yeah.
Section 12.3, cell phone usage. What we did here is we just put everybody on an even playing field. So meaning the district offers one of two things. You can either participate in the district's cell phone plan and the district administers that for you, or you can go on your own plan and be reimbursed by the district. So what we did is clarify essentially that a reimbursement would reflect the average per line cost of an in-district, of the in-district plan, so that people aren't being reimbursed for higher or lower amounts. With respect to cell phone replacement, it had been loosey-goosey over the last number of years of, you know, some departments, you know, had to pick from this pool and other departments didn't. And we're just saying you can get one cell phone a year, which is based on the upgrade, the frequency that upgrades come up for a given line. You can pick from the free list, if you will, that are at no cost to the district. And if you want something nicer, you can pay for it. And that's consistent across all employees.
And if you are getting reimbursed for your phone, do the rules that you can get personal calls, like it seemed like even in an emergency they can't use their company provided cell phone, but I wasn't sure if those same rules applied if it was your personal cell phone.
I think in the company provided, it just says that you can so long as it doesn't interfere with the work, if I remember correctly.
I thought the red lines had said, yeah, so... district cell phones, you shall be limited to district business, period. There are no exceptions anymore.
And then the following one was all... So this becomes a comma, and then it goes down to here where it says, all personal use of district cell phones must not disrupt an employee carrying out their responsibilities.
Oh, okay, so...
Yeah, it's like struck gotcha. Through all the way from there to this section.
Well, that makes sense.
So is the district cell phone where C struck out, is that part of C above then? Shouldn't that be E?
No, I...
It says to me...
Yes.
Or it should be D. Sorry, it should be D.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what this is saying is that the cell phone is prioritized for district business because it sounds like you can use it for personal use.
Mm-hmm.
But the first part of this says it's limited.
Limited is...
district business. And then the second part of the sentence says that it's not really limited to district business.
Right. A little fuzzy.
Some clarification.
So maybe some cleanup.
I think if you said that the district cell phone is for the purposes of district business, and then you say, however, personal use, it's allowed, but it can't disrupt.
Yeah.
Instead of limited to for the purpose of.
Limited is.
Yeah. That's a good.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Tim's all over this.
Okay, we'll clean that up.
You can never get through to them because there wasn't a personal call.
That's it on the administrative policies. There's no other questions on that. On the personnel policies, the first substantial change is just in section 5F. And all this is doing is better reflecting how we hire employees. So the county's the old policy is basically said that you'd have a hiring register to determine who you were going to interview. Well, we also have a scoring and hiring register for the interview process to be able to select an employee. So that's the meat of the change there.
And the personnel director is Brian Bellamy?
Correct.
A little bit of a misspelling there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that helps with the problem we had before where we extended a job offer and found out we couldn't hire this person. No.
Yeah, and I think it's just, we need some criteria to choose from.
Okay.
Section 6C and H, temporary and seasonal employees. These were changes to the Summit County policies that they recommended. Essentially what it means for us in the future, Lisa, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but basically as long as a seasonal employee works less than 780 hours, we do not have to offer them health care.
Correct.
Where in the past we did.
We don't have a temporary employee pool right now, temporary employees, but we may in the future. We don't know, so we just kind of update.
You just have summertime help?
But we determine those as seasonal employees separate from temporary. So the seasonals We were, based on kind of the interpretation of the guidelines around ACA, we were allowing seasonals the option to opt in to our health insurance plan because they were working a certain amount of time. The county has now received some guidance that we were being pretty lenient with that, and we could tighten that up a little bit so that we didn't have to offer health care to temporary seasonal employees, as long as we determine it's a season and we have a specific season, and that's we do our work in the summer. So as long as we can define that period, we're okay. And I went back and checked, and we don't really don't seasonals don't work over 620 hours, so I think we're fine. It'll just help us with the cost of not. They all opt out because they're on their parents' health insurance, so they get $350 additional each month. So it's a pretty nice benefit, but it's not something that we feel like we need to continue doing, and this policy will allow us to do that.
So the $350 goes away?
$350 will go away to them.
And then we have temporary?
And then, yeah, the county also uses a temporary, different from a seasonal, and that is not a defined seasonal period. We don't have any current temporary employees, but we just wanted to have that language there, mirror the county, in case we ever did get into that situation. Yeah.
New Department of Labor official in Salt Lake. That's the reason why they have a different interpretation than the former one.
Interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
So the next one, Section 8 and 6, award restrictions. This one's going to require a little discussion. So if you read, I'll let Chris get it up on the screen here. So the previous language said any of the bonuses, including our annual bonus that we've historically done at the end of the year, and it's been a district-wide incentive. If you read the old language, the most recent performance evaluation must be at least above the district average. That would mean half of the employees can't get the annual bonus.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is that we strike that. I added the language that said they must not be undergoing a corrective action plan, meaning, you know, that their performance has been deemed to not be up to par, and we're, you know, there's a corrective action plan as part of this policy.
How we don't get an award if that's where you're at?
Yeah, if you're, you know, if you're on a corrective action plan, you don't get an award.
That makes sense. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Brian Bellamy and Jamie Bracken was not in support of this change.
What did they want?
They wanted the original language. Or they wanted it had to be above the average, and they must not be undergoing a corrective action plan.
Well, but have we ever not given the award to 50% of the people?
I like that.
Yeah,
it's just
like
everybody
the
gets one.
This is better. Maybe it's the district, though. It's not the entire county, right? It's just the district. So you're going to have some consistency on how performance evaluations are done. So that's maybe not too bad. I mean, how many corrective action plans do you have
Zero.
Open right now?
Zero.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
Okay. Let's see, where are we at? Section 9, fringe benefits.
Maybe I couldn't ask that question in open session.
I'm sorry, I sort of missed that. So how does that resolve itself with Jamie's objections?
It doesn't. It just becomes a district and a board recommendation to approve the change that Lisa and I have made.
Okay.
And then it's up to the council to decide.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
And Jamie will review this again before the council approves?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Not an issue.
Because a lot of the other districts don't have this bonus program either, right?
I don't know how Basin Rec does it. Clearly,
Summit County doesn't have a bonus structure like this?
We've talked about this with the council before. Our bonus structure is different than the counties. We offer more opportunities. As far as the annual bonus goes, when we went to them last time, they said as long as it's somewhere in your budget where it's identified separately and not buried in some wage number, and we do break it out separately in incentives in the HR line, so that, and you have to approve it. So it's not like it's just a given. It's something that we talk about and approve as a budget, right. And they were okay with that.
Good. And those bonuses are now taxable.
Yep. They weren't taxable before?
Mm-hmm. Under a certain amount, they weren't taxable. But now they're all taxable. Even the under $50 ones are now taxable.
We went through that one thing. Okay. So then what's this? Employee assistance? Next.
So yeah, the fringe benefits. The employee assistance plan is another Summit County program that they've rolled out. Our district employees are now eligible for counseling services and some other benefits that are free of charge to them. The district provides that as part of our benefit package. And how much is it, Lisa? It's
$2.80 an employee per month. So it's pretty minimal cost, and it offers them a free hotline, multiple counseling sessions for mental health. It's available to their family. Think it's a pretty good benefit, and something that typically we would have to direct employees to, you know, call Select Health and try to look for a mental health specialist that they could see. Now we can just direct them straight to this line, and that resource they're then able to get into the right kind of counseling, you know, that would be covered under their insurance plan. So it's just kind of an immediate need, a crisis situation.
Yeah, you know, for marriage counseling, I think, and counseling for children and all sorts of things that are a nice benefit. So.
Jamie uses the one that's B2.
You start burning me every once in a while, Dave.
me being the supervisor.
Jamie's talking about me again.
Vacation's the next one. The district has historically front-loaded vacation at the start of the year, and that creates an administrative headache for Lisa and her staff if we lose an employee or there's a number of things that they have to juggle. So what we're recommending is going to the county's policy, which is that our employees will accrue vacation bi-weekly, just like they do sick time. And the accrual, I think if you go down a little further, Chris, where is that change? Here it is. We'll switch from a front loading to an accrual basis on July 1st, 2020. And the reason for that is we give the employees a year of essentially front loaded time to plan their vacation time. And then July 1st, we go into an accrual mode.
That way they don't take their vacation the first 2 weeks of January and then quit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which happens.
Always.
Next up is the parental leave. This is essentially non-birthing parent 4 weeks of paid leave if the family has a baby or goes through an adoption. This is a...
Oh, no, I was just... Go ahead, are you gonna...
I was just going to say again, this is a Summit County policy that they started, like Dave said, last year.
The one slight difference that we've included that the county requires the 4 weeks to be taken all at one time. Because of our limited staffing numbers, we wanted more flexibility to have that be broken up a week here or a week there, rather than having to be taken all at one time and they can work with their supervisor to try to schedule that. That's the only difference from the county.
That's good.
But it has to be used for both the district and Summit County employees within 12 weeks,
yes.
Correct?
Of the adoption or the birth.
Oh.
So you can't wait until they're three and
take it a month off.
See ya.
A lot of companies, it's within the first year. So.
So is there anything else? Well,
what's the difference between the district accountant and the accounting manager and the CFO? I just feel like we have a lot of different terms in accounting. Like who's?
And we have an accountant who's Kathy.
Oh, okay.
Was here a little, well, one time I think. This Steve is the accounting manager.
Okay.
And then I'm the CFO and the treasurer.
So the district accountant is somebody else that's not the two of you that does the record keeping of the vacation.
Is there a?
Yeah.
It was changed.
Oh, it's a district accountant. Yeah, it's Kathy.
Okay.
Does payroll.
She does payroll. Yeah.
I thought there were just two.
And then there's the manager and the CFO. Uh-huh. Okay, is there anything else of substance in here that we need to
I'll spend 10 about? Seconds finishing it up. The transportation policy was just clarified to follow our administrative policies. The remaining changes were all recommendations from Summit County.
Kind of an update on how we do grievances. That's good. Okay, are there any questions on these policy updates? Okay, is there a motion to recommend?
There is one thing we talked about earlier that we didn't catch it, and I just want to make you aware of it before we insert it. Regarding vacation, we talked about changing it to accrual. Currently, we have a policy where you can only, when you get to that December time period, you can only carry over 1 year of vacation. This puts us into a situation now where then you have, let me back up. You can only carry over a year, and then you have, if you have more than a year, you have 3 months to use it. So by March 31st, you need to use it or you lose it. Now that we will be accruing, we would like to set it at a maximum, like we do for our sick time, of a year's worth of vacation. But we thought we would add those three extra months, so it could be 15 months, a total of 15 months, so that you get a little bit of leeway to use that versus the year. So we would have a sentence in here just saying employees may accrue up to a maximum of 15 months vacation, and follow the next pay period after that 15 month max is hit, you would then forfeit your vacation.
Yeah. It wouldn't accrue anymore.
Go ahead. So why do we need to do that?
You know, to me, vacation is often taken, and people building up large balances. To me, is not financially healthy, nor is it good HR practice.
Yeah, I would actually support less than a year. Yeah.
Okay. So, if there's any other comments or questions, we have a motion.
It is the motion to recommend these changes to the council?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I move that we recommend these changes to the council.
Wait, but do we have a decision on how much vacation we're going to recommend being carried?
12 months worth or 15 months worth?
Sounded like Bob and I were kind of questioning the year to 15 months.
Bob, what's your recommendation?
I'd stay with the 12 months, personally.
Is that what it was before, or was
it? It was 12 months, but then right when you hit that December time frame and we front-loaded all, you had from January 1st to March 31st to use it.
But you
it was effectively also, 15 months.
Yeah.
Well,
but actually it was 2 years, because you got, in January 1st, you got front-loaded the entire year. Yeah. You carried a year over, so now you've got 2 years worth of vacation plus the 3 months. If you had, you know, if you had extra above, you would end up with more than 2 years worth of vacation to use in 1 year. And what we're talking about is only 15, keeping it as a rolling 15 months. Mm-hmm. So we're a substantial decrease from what we were initially offering.
Well, wait a minute, I don't understand. Does the employee earn vacation on a monthly basis?
They will now.
Going forward on that effective July.
You're right, but it wasn't earned.
I used all my vacation in, let's call it 2018. And on January 1st, I'm now just hypothetically entitled to 2 weeks vacation that I could take in January.
You could take, and if you left the organization, you'd have to pay it back. Which is why we made the changes that we did to go to an accrual setup.
Ian and Bob, I guess I'd be inclined to go with the staff's recommendation on this.
15 months?
Kind of know how it works.
Me too.
So do you want to amend your motion to have it at 15 months?
Well, isn't that what it says now?
It's not in there.
It's not in there. This is something we just realized when we were in our staff meeting today. So I just need to get your approval with the changes that we discussed, and we can put it in here.
So, Lisa, I presume that you're up to speed on the tax accounting for that, right?
The tax accounting for...
vacation accrual. And when vacation has to be taken and all that good stuff.
I'm not sure I'm following your... I understand what you're saying, yes. We want to reduce the amount of exposure or liability that we have to carry forward. That's why we went to a 50% payout on sick versus 100% payout on sick. So I think this gets us to the same benefit level for the employees, let's say. I think this administratively is going to make payrolls administration much easier, because we're just accruing, the employees know when they're going to hit that amount. I don't think this is going to change significantly that accrual.
Okay.
I think it might actually help behavior, where people will start to use it and not save it up as much as they probably have historically. Brian's smiling at me. Yeah, I think so.
We have some guys that just...
Well, generally, the way I've seen this done is
you accrue
a certain amount of hours. You can't accrue more than a certain number of hours.
And that's what we're going to change this system to.
And you're just trying to figure out the number of hours you accrue, whether it's over 12 months or 15.
What's the... Well, the accrual is going to be the same. It's just the time. How many... Are we letting somebody roll 160 hours forward or 120? And the 15 months would get us at about rolling 134 for the average employee. 0 to 5 years.
As opposed to capping the total number of hours that they can accrue, and then they stop accruing.
Well, that'll be capped at about the 134, and then they can't accrue anymore. Mm-hmm. Or basically, it would just be reversed out like we kind of do with sick.
I think what Tim's saying is specify the number. That's what you're saying.
I think,
specify the number, and after that, you don't get any more hours. You can keep that number, but you're not going to go over.
It's not a big deal.
The way that
that seems like a lot of companies do. Yeah, just put a cap on it.
Yep. Yeah, so it'll be probably about 140.
Yeah, because you can the numbers are there. It's in 5-year increments.
Yeah.
So you can only hit that number.
But isn't it different based on the amount that you get in the service?
Yeah. It goes up to 6 years. Yeah.
The way it's written today, that's correct, Tim.
Wherever that is.
You're getting close. Up one more, I think, one or two more.
So if you were a 0 to 5 year, a 5-year employee, you can carry over, you can go up to 96 hours. If we kept it at 12. Otherwise, it's 96 plus 25% of the 96.
I think that's fine.
I'm fine with that.
We have a handful, maybe like 3 employees, that will hit that number that we, when we get to the end of the year, that need to use it up. This isn't, I think most people are taking vacation, and that's what we're trying to encourage them to do, is to use their vacation.
Yeah,
it's not a bank account.
No.
just to reiterate that what we've recommended would be a consistent benefit with what they have today, is what Lisa said.
Yeah. And this is also the way the county is, we mentioned that. They also prorate. Front-loading vacation is kind of an old way to do it, and administratively.
Is this a county specified, or is this just the district that does this? We set the amounts within the district. It isn't like a county-wide type of thing.
I think that's the same as the county.
The county does a similar thing. I don't know if the county uses those specific numbers.
The question I'm leading to is do we know that this is competitive?
I don't know.
Is this consistent with other, because this is all wrapped up in the benefits, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess it's kind of a question about how are the benefits tracking with other businesses where we're trying to attract talent from or trying to not lose talent to on these benefits.
Seems a little low compared to three consulting firms I can think of in the Valley.
See, I was comparing it to what you can get at, like, you know, a Promontory or something, and I think they're generous. So.
Yeah, it looked about right to me.
2 weeks is generally kind of, you start, it's 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more.
It's a little different topic than how to set the accrual rate.
We also have quite a few holidays.
Yeah.
That adds to it. We have like 10 holidays.
Yeah, you have the sick time.
And you've got sick time. It's a pretty, I think the sick time benefit, and you don't, and you also don't lose it. A lot of times you have to, you lose it or use it, your vacation. So we're letting you roll over a year's worth. I think that's pretty, and you can accrue up to 400 hours of sick time.
Okay.
Critical battery.
How's that motion coming along?
Well, have we made some corrections in here?
We noted that, well, unless we've decided on the 12 or 15.
That the motion, as it sits, says we will recommend these updates to the county council with the revision of adding the 15-month provision as discussed. Mm-hmm.
I second that.
Yes.
I make that motion.
Okay, that was Karen. And then, was there a second?
I seconded it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 That was unanimous. Okay.
Corrupt illegal.
I think we've talked about the biggest thing on legal, which is community water. The franchise agreement, the only issue that we had left had to do with working out what the time period would be if there needed to be a relocation. And Scott proposed some language, and the language looks fine. I don't know if anybody's looked at that in their
on the
thing, but it basically
agreement.
Yeah, it's 3.5. It's relocation for a third party. About halfway down, what we've inserted is, for purposes of this subsection, reasonable advance written notice shall be no less than 30 calendar days in the event of a temporary relocation, and no less than 60 calendar days for a permanent relocation. The grantee shall employ commercially available best practices to meet the relocation times. In the event the grantee has commenced efforts to complete the relocation, is making continuous progress toward completion, the relocation time shall be extended as necessary to allow for completion.
Is that just for Mountain Regional or for everybody?
Right now, that's just for Mountain Region.
Just our.
No one else.
Good job, Scott.
Yeah. Well, that was our problem, though. We just
sounded to me like
we didn't have enough time. There was no provision to say time could be
get an extension.
Okay, so are there,
everybody else.
Who's
says
the third? Who's the third party in there?
Do we need a motion for you to sign that?
No, that would be like if the sewer district was doing something, needed you guys to move your line a little bit.
So they're just a third party to this agreement, then?
Well, they'd be a third party that is also a franchisee. And as long as you're a Class A franchise, they would have to pay for you guys to move your line. But you have to have a certain amount of time in order to do that. And this kind of puts those timelines in and provides a little bit of a fudge factor to say, well, you know, if it takes us longer than 60 days, as long as we're diligently pursuing it, you can do that.
You didn't put in there, but in no case shall the time be more than 3 years.
No, that's only Class B franchise holders.
Do we need a motion for you to sign it?
you're good to go. This, you were just kind of updating us where you were there.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, Dave, did I read this? There's no franchise fee payable, is that correct?
That's correct. I stripped the franchise fee out.
The French fry fee.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Dave?
There is the ongoing agreement that we have, the master agreement with Weber Basin. We think they've approved it.
Yeah, so I can speak to these two things. So we have the new interconnect agreement. We've spoken about this in the past, that the interconnect, the operation, maintenance, and replacement will fall under the entity whose water is passing through it.
That's good.
And be billed to the entity who's taking water from it. So essentially, we will manage the operation and maintenance of the facility. We'll bill Weber Basin for all costs. Which is a good thing. And then on the surplus water agreement, Weber Basin has signed that. So that's just an update to the board that we now have a contract and agreement with Weber Basin, which we hadn't had before. It's more of a cleanup task.
Okay. So is that in item 11?
That is 10C.
10C, okay. Mm-hmm. Can we go to 11?
Sure. The only thing that I have is we're considering meeting at Basin Rec's office for board meetings. They have a nice boardroom. Are there any objections to that?
That's close to my house.
Is that over by the bike
trail? Just across the highway?
It's at the Trailside Park.
Trailside School, yeah. Across the street.
Probably
Okay. Yeah.
From here.
Yes,
got it.
That work for everybody?
I don't think we'll have sun being a problem. They have a projector in a really nice room to meet in.
Yeah, we'll be able to spread out all the more. Good.
And a dial-in system.
Okay.
Yep.
They have one in. We can bring ours.
They've got all the accessories.
Cool.
Their board meets on Wednesday, so.
Yeah, we do. There will be a conflict in.
In July.
July, but they have another room that we can use. That's
it's
just
still
adjacent
like a facility,
to it. So
yeah.
It's fine.
Just adjacent, so.
So I have a conflict coming up in June for the meeting on the 20th. So we could probably still have a quorum. I might be able to call in. I don't know. We could move it. If anybody else
is Bob going to be on for that one?
On the 20th, Bob, how's June look for you?
The original date, which I believe was the 13th, so the 12th, 13th, and 14th were not good for me. But other than that,
no good. The 13th. Yeah, and I thought if we moved it to the 27th, that's kind of getting cozy to this council meeting. Okay. So,
next week I'm back.
So I guess we just leave it there, and I'll try and call in otherwise.
Or if you want to change it to a different day, you know, like it doesn't have to be a Thursday.
Wednesday night would work. The 19th.
That may
be okay.
That may conflict with
Basin
Rec board.
We could just meet.
Well, surely we can find a place to meet.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be able to be here either.
Well, Dave wouldn't be able to be here.
Since the council meets that same night.
Yeah, Wednesdays are hard for Dave.
Oh,
not that you can't meet without me.
Or me.
No way.
Because Dave wouldn't last very long.
Okay, we'll just leave it as is for now.
It's getting late.
There's no other business for tonight. We'll be adjourned at 7:33.
Great.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, everybody.